Tony, there is one site which is too dark.
So far, I'm working on another. I did.
Ahmed, excuse me.
Documentary on Indian work.
There is one site which is too dark for us to see.
March 31st at midnight.
I think the one from Halifax.
It was so late. Yeah. It was on last.
Two voice levels from.
I get two more showings and that'll be the end of it. But. So
the one from Halifax is too dark.
Ooh, can you talk with the tech about that or?
Just getting bigger and bigger as the more I look into it. It's like, where do I start pulling in? So, let's see.
Much better now. The more light in Halifax will be better.
More light, yes. Yeah, it looks good now.
Now I can see Tony.
Yes.
The first row there. I cannot see Alexa. I'm not sure where she is.
Well, I'm over Tony's left shoulder, but I don't know if he'd appreciate that description.
Now, can we flip over just to so they can see the room, so they can see you? Can we flip? Yeah, so let's pull back, pan it, show them what our setup looks like here, our room.
This is one of the tech guys at the U of L. I just want to remind everyone at the remote sites that Trevor Gorda, my apologies. When you're not speaking and when another site is conversing, if you'll mute your mics so that we don't pick up the ruffling of papers and clearing of throats and so forth, that will produce much better audio for the conference.
I think that's what it means to mute mics. Is over there.
Mute it from here or mute it from there? So we should pass this back and forth. Is that right?
Technically, it's supposed to be over
there. No, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't think it is this because this doesn't seem to do anything.
Hi.
That's so better. See, now we can we hear silence, which is actually preferential until the time you want to speak, and at which point you unmute your mics and then give the floor to that speaker. Yeah. Thank you.
Being here, so.
Should I get into the chat here? Or?
Well, maybe we don't have enough laptops.
We don't.
Maybe you can work with Melanie. Can you help with James and work the chat?
Do you mind if I?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at this.
What is it?
Is it the ones
it's too late. I'm just
okay.
Got a lot to think about right
later.
Now. Yeah. I'm just talking with James Moore. We're starting to get organized on our chat room. So as the class is unfolding, as the class is developing, people who are tuning in anywhere in the world may be interested to join in the chat. And I think it's important if we can get a report on what is being chatted about as the class unfolds. And so I'm hoping James Moore can monitor the chat and give us a feel for what's happening.
There's a link on the website for real time.
Yeah, so this is being broadcast.
Just because I had a friend last week.
Yeah.
Is this?
Okay. Wei, Nicole, ni hao ma. Wait, Frank. Yeah. It's quite the story. Yeah. Yeah. What? Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, anyway. It's right now. Okay, it's slightly after 6 o'clock. It's Friday. It's Wednesday, February the 8th. And this is Globalization Since 1492. I'm Anthony Hall. I'm the professor of a course here at the University of Lethbridge. The University of Lethbridge has a course called Globalization Since 1492. And tonight we're introducing, we're bringing in three sites. Of course, we connect every week with Pincher Creek. And also there before us is Halifax at St. Mary's University, where Dr. Wilma van der Veen has helped us very much in putting together a group and has come up with a concept. We've collaborated on this concept. If we can go to the document camera. Tonight's class seminar, Canada and the Global Community After the Election. So that's going to be our focus. And I can't see, I don't have any visual. I don't see the plasma. I need to see the plasma cameras in front of me here. So we're still working out little kinks. I need to see, to have visual contact with what's going on in front of me, because of course I'm facing an opposite way than the class. So we've got that. So for the first half of the class, while we're connected to Halifax, it's just after 9 o'clock in Halifax. We're covering three time zones, three provinces tonight. And so they're going to be packing up at 10:30 their time to leave. So for the first half of the class, we're going to focus on this topic, Canada and the global community after the election. And in the second half of the class, we'll focus particularly on a discussion with Dr. Mohammed El-Masri. Dr. El-Masri, for 12 years, I believe, has been president of the Canadian Islamic Congress. I was reading the Globe and Mail this morning and came across a long and significant quote from Dr. El-Masri about what's going on with the cartoon affair, if we could call it that, starting in Denmark and spreading around the world now. So no doubt that subject will come up. I would also like to indicate that there's some history to this. Part of the history to this is that a group of primarily young people, students, graduate students, professors, have taken it upon ourselves to talk about and try to put into action a new Canadian university, however that might be conceived and done. And so tonight's event is connected to that, in that that's how I met Wilma van der Veen, Dr. van der Veen, who is giving a course now at St. Mary's University and has invited the people that you see, most of the people that you see in front of you. We've also been working, some of us, on this project, which I would call the Axis of Enlightenment, for a couple of years now. And I want to identify particularly the veterans in this process. And there in the middle of the shot from Halifax, you see April Maloney. Wave there, April Maloney. Identify yourself. April showed the film she made about what's been going on the East Coast with respect to Aboriginal fisheries. You know, there was a lot of controversy after the Marshall decision. There was some vigilantism. There was some confrontations over the right to fish on the West Coast, on the East Coast, in the Maritime provinces. April has been with us. And Tony Seed, who is in the foreground there, this is his third time, as it is with Dr. El-Masri, to participate in the Axis of Enlightenment. And I met Tony on phone. We've collaborated. We've worked on publishing projects together. But a big breakthrough was the symposium that Tony Seed organized in Halifax the Halifax Symposium on Disinformation in the Media. And that's where I met Mohammed Al-Masri, Dr. Al-Masri. And Tony has done, we've done a show from a class connecting to his magazine, Shun Peking, which is well respected and distributed throughout Nova Scotia. And Tony did a quite extraordinary presentation, a textual analysis of George Bush's speech. We had George Bush's visit to Ottawa covered. He went from Ottawa to Halifax. His visit to Halifax, I think, was quite significant because Halifax is a naval base. It's a military center. It's one of the most important military centers in the continent. And Tony ran in the recent election. He ran a campaign based on giving no harbor to war. He ran for the Communist Party of Canada. I'm proud to also say that one of his opponents who actually won the election in the Halifax riding, Alexa McDonough, is sitting off to his right from my point of view. And Alexa McDonough, of course, is a pillar of Canadian socialism, social democracy in Canada, led the NDP party, is certainly now playing a role as a senior stateswoman. I think it's fair to say the NDP have a very interesting challenge ahead to see to what extent they might work with the government of Stephen Harper. It's going to be quite a challenge, and so we will be discussing things with people here tonight who are actually in positions to make a lot of influence and impact. And I hope it'll be a good interactive discussion. There's Dr. Vanderveen. We can see you there, Wilma. And once again, thank you so much for bringing this gathering together. I thought I would ask Tony Seed, given his experience with this initiative, to perhaps lead us off with a few comments about this subject tonight. And then, Wilma, you have a sense of how the room is. I don't know everybody in the room. I'm certainly looking forward to hearing Alexa McDonough's observations and see how Mohammed, Dr. Al-Masri will respond. So, Tony, can you lead us off for perhaps 10 or 15 minutes? No sound. No sound from Halifax. No sound from Halifax.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. I actually ran for the Marxist-Leninist Party.
Tony, hear me? Why don't you just move your chair so you're... Can you see yourself, like, so you're well-framed? You're off on a corner there. Move to your left. Move the other way. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Is this what Chomsky calls framing? The topic tonight is Canada in the global community after the election. I would like to say a lot, but hopefully I can say what I want to say within the 10 or 15 minutes. The elections that finished on January 23rd did so in a very inconclusive manner. You have a new government based on the first past the post parliamentary system of party government, brought into power, that is, a conservative government led by Stephen Harper. According to the elections results, the Harper government received approximately 37% of the vote of those who actually cast a vote. The participation in the election voters was again very low. I think it was 63%. In Nova Scotia, it was low. In Newfoundland, it was somewhat higher, like 71%. Thus, you can say that of the total electorate, Harper received 23% of the vote. And in no way can Harper then claim to have a mandate from the Canadian people to carry out his program. Mandate is a word that's derived from its Latin root, mandare. It means to command. There's by no reasonable interpretation that either the Conservative government, Mr. Harper, or anyone else say that they have a mandate or that the issue is to keep the parliament working in order to avert the, you know, the next election. The average period for a minority government in Canada is estimated to be 18 months. So in other words, there'll be another election approximately in 18 months, give or take 6 months or whatever. The election, in my view, was driven by two main considerations. One is the attempt by the economic elite of Canada to restore an equilibrium of two main parties, that is, a so-called natural governing party and a so-called national opposition party. That is a situation you basically had in play during the 1980s up till 1993 when the Conservatives were wiped out and the Bloc Québécois arrived in Ottawa as the official majority. In this period of almost 15 years, you've had a concept promoted of a third way. This concept is internationally most associated with Tony Blair of Britain. That is that there's another option between the two governing parties, the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party, in any of the Anglo-American democracies. So the attempt has been coming out of the last minority government to restore an equilibrium of these two parties, or these two parties, one of which in alliance with another one, for example, the Liberals and the NDP. Bring about a situation of stability. If you remember, it was The Economist magazine that coined the term about Prime Minister Martin, that he was a ditherer. Right? This term, which became popular in Canada, was actually coined by the British Economist magazine, which refers to somebody who's a vacillator, somebody who's indecisive, and so forth. So essentially they wanted to have a stable situation in Canada, and towards this end, all the different parties, what I call bourgeois parties, campaigned extremely hard, fought very hard, spent an extraordinary amount of money to try and achieve that aim. Of course, in the end, a minority government was established. But basically, if you read the press in the first week after the elections, the major newspapers were quite satisfied with the results. The second objective is accommodation with the agenda coming out of the United States. And in this, I talk about the politics of annexation, which are followed by both the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party, and to some extent conciliated with by the NDP, and Alexa probably will speak to that later. And I'll come back to that. So basically, in my view, you have the Conservative Party has been installed to carry out the agenda that the Liberal Party could not carry out. It was very clear at the beginning of the elections that Martin was not able to distance himself from the sponsorship scandal. And because of that, he was not going to be able to come back into power. During the course of the elections, there were a number of very interesting developments of, if you like, a dangerous nature. Especially was the RCMP investigation of Goodall. that is, you have the interference in the election or intrusion in the election by an actual arm of the state. And to that extent, it's of a far more corrupt nature than, say, the entire sponsorship scandal. This question was not dealt with in any serious manner in the media, and it also suggests that there were other forces at work, including from the United States. In the Arar scandal, it has come out how the Americans worked through the security forces in Canada to carry out different objectives, that is CSIS and the RCMP. So the issue is to get rid of Martin, bring in the fresh face, and carry out the same old agenda, the agenda of annexation, the agenda of making Canada competitive in the international marketplace, and I'll come back to that point. Within one day of the swearing-in of the Harper government, the whole rosy picture which has been created about a new, clean, fresh face has collapsed. You now have Vancouver in an uproar because of the appointment of this Emerson to the cabinet. And you have British Columbia saying, we have been dealt with in the same way as Quebec was dealt with. Then you have the appointment of a party hack from the Senate to the cabinet to represent the city, allegedly to represent the city of Montreal. So all the ethics that the Conservative Party has espoused were thrown in the dust on the very first day of the Harper government. So we have to look at, we have to be very sober when we read the media about this, because if you read the Globe and Mail, National Post, we have a very experienced team that Harper has installed. They are even socially conservative. The finance minister, Flaherty, is a very trusted and experienced, will be a very experienced and trusted finance minister because his experience is that, all right? Flaherty is a car salesman. That is his profession. And as finance minister in the Harris government, he helped bring the Harris government down quickly. You have the Minister of International Resources is a public relations person, and so on. In our own province, we have Peter McKay appointed to the position of Foreign Affairs Minister. Peter McKay is basically an American warmonger who campaigned in 2003 for Canada to join the coalition of the willing in the occupation and invasion of Iraq. He has no experience in foreign affairs apart from that credential. Harper, since he's been elected, has dealt with two questions in terms of foreign affairs, and they're both very significant. One is the elections in Haiti, and the second are the elections in Palestine. And I'd like to look at those briefly to see the agenda.
The 10 or 15 minutes is we're getting near the end of that. Tony, do you want to save that, or do you want to deal with it in 3 or 4 minutes, or how should we do this?
Give me 3-4 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Harper, in terms of Haiti, said the following, and this is extremely important. Canada may not be a superpower, but we stand for higher values to which all peoples aspire. And it is important that our actions as Canadians promote those values in all corners of the world. Canada stands for higher values to which all peoples aspire. So here's the notion of Canada as civilized nation and other all peoples as uncivilized. The whole central theme of the Eurocentric approach, which is essential to what is called the clash of civilizations and so on and so forth. And it is on this basis of promoting these values, Harper says, that we are going to be involved in Haiti, Latin America, and around the world. So basically what you have is a commitment by Harper to carry on the agenda of the Martin Liberals. That is, to impose those values and that democratic system, which is suitable for Anglo-American imperialism and for Canadian monopolies throughout the world. Hence, you have the response to the elections in Palestine, in which 77.6% of the people participated, in which Hamas, the Islamic Brotherhood, won the vast majority of seats. That is, no longer is it a question that it was a democratic election, but of the ideas and values of the political party, that is Hamas. And we can also see that in the whole controversy around the question of the Mohammed cartoons, in which Canada also is participating in the sense of the media. That is, people are being stigmatized on the basis of their values, on the basis of their views, on the basis of their belief system. And in that, they are characterized as being terrorist, as being medieval, as being fanatical. And these views and beliefs and thought material are being criminalized. So you have Canada interfering in the internal affairs of other peoples and other nations, whether it is Haiti, whether it is not militarily so much, but Canada also was involved in the Palestine elections, and especially now in Afghanistan, to ensure that these people respect and uphold what Harper and before him Martin called Canadian values. I think I'll leave it there. I'd like to speak about the geopolitical role of Canada, but my time is up.
Thank you so much, Tony. Are there questions in Lethbridge here or in Pincher Creek or in Halifax? Any observations or questions? Wilma, why don't you trade seats with Tony? Wilma, why don't you...
Can I actually suggest that I'd actually like to hear from Alexa first? Do you mind?
Well, what I was going to propose, Wilma, is that you introduce, you take the center stage, and you do the introductions from here on in, and you may have a way to introduce your guest, because you invited Alexa, and I'm thrilled you did, and it's a wonderful thing to have such an important Canadian with us. So why don't you trade seats with Tony and give us a feel for who's in the room here. I suggest that everybody, we should see everybody who's in the room on the camera. In other words, I think, I know there's a professor with a white beard who's who moved.
But that's why, back this way.
So why don't you just take some...
Here
you
come here.
Hold on. Here we are.
Yeah, so if you could take over in terms of the introductions, and certainly we'll want Alexa to trade seats with Tony there. But if you could introduce us to who's in the room and help us to get acclimatized to what you've put together, and then introduce who you think is appropriate.
Certainly. Just so, in terms of just even introducing myself, just so that all of you in the other places know that my background is actually as a sociologist, but the last few years I've actually been teaching a lot of criminology, just because that's a very popular program here at St. Mary's. And then I'm also, I guess, an activist on various issues. In terms of many of the issues that Tony was raising, Canada-U.S. relations is an issue dear to my heart. And so Tony raised a lot of issues, and this past election has raised a lot of issues and questions. Just to Jim, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. I was coming simply as an observer. I was not here to participate. I didn't know what the... I wasn't in touch with Wilma about this, so we just met tonight for the first time. And we're looking at other possible video conferencing, so I was curious about how the process was going to work. So I didn't come to make comments about the election or to participate directly in the process.
Are you at Dalhousie or St. Mary's, or what institution are you affiliated with, sir?
Oh, St. Mary's University.
Yes. Great. And who's that behind you, Wilma?
Janice Ainsworth?
Ashworth.
Ashworth. And that's somebody who, I guess, I've been in touch with just briefly over email to do with the new university project. She had hoped to attend the last meeting in Montreal but wasn't able to get to it. And so I'm not sure if you'd like to say a few words of why you're interested.
I'm a Dalhousie University student. I study international development and environmental science. Just came for interest sake because the election is something that we've been talking about a bit, or quite a bit in class, and I'd like to learn what other people have on their minds.
Okay. April, do you want to say a few words?
Oh, well, I'm a graduate from Mount St. Vincent in Peace and Conflict, and I'm just here to observe also.
Okay, great. And Alexa?
There's much going on here. For instance, I've seen this course now. It's on video iPod. So if you can imagine watching what's going on a 2-inch by 3-inch screen, that's one of the things I've got in mind. So for instance, framing, like Mohammed hasn't been properly framed, Lissa hasn't been properly framed. It's important that we, you know, use the technology as best we can. I don't know if there's technicians in the room who can just drop the camera down and put the main figure, squarely in the middle of the picture and not have a great span of white board. Okay. Can you hear me, Mohammed? Dr. Al-Masri? Can somebody frame you a little more tightly and a little more in the center, or?
Yes, I think Hazel.
Yeah. So, and now, Tony, can you change places with Alexa McDonough? So we've got Alexa McDonough clearly in the foreground.
Shift over here.
Yeah, go. Can you see yourselves? Can you, have you? Yeah. So I don't know if, Wilma, if you want to say more about the introduction, if you want to go into more detail, because I'm sure Alexa McDonough's CV is pages and pages long, or if we'll take the approach that here is a Canadian that really does need no introduction for the vast majority of us.
Well, Tony, maybe I can pick up there. I don't think anyone needs or wants a CV about myself. I feel a bit in the same position as Jim Morrison, that I simply heard about what was happening here tonight and was really quite interested from three points of view. The concept of a new university, which is taking advantage of new technology, and also I think recognizing that access to post-secondary education is just an enormous problem for huge numbers of people today, for all the reasons that everybody in this room understands, suggests to me that we need to be exploring various models and variations on what's now being done that's partially successful and partly a disaster. So I came along because I was interested in what little bit I had seen about that. Secondly, what people are thinking today about the outcome of the election is, of course, of considerable interest to me. I'm entering my 26th year in elected office, but only a half of that, or less than half of that, has been spent in the federal arena. And in the last 3 years, having stepped down as leader, I've been the foreign affairs critic, the peace advocate, the international cooperation critic, and the post-secondary education critic. So, again, what you're here to talk about tonight is of interest to me. I came actually expecting that there was going to be both a wide-ranging and probably freewheeling debate among various people on the outcome of the election and how it looks from here, not expecting to be a direct participant in it because I'm far from being a really objective observer of events, although I'm enormously interested in knowing what people think. I would just very briefly comment on a couple of things, picking up on where Tony left off, and then I think you take it from here. I think it's just very, very early to have any idea what's really going to happen. I agree essentially, a lot of things Tony and I don't agree on, but I agree essentially that what this election was about in the main was an enormous attempt to restore Canada to a kind of safe two-party system where there's a changing of the guard from time to time, but not a changing of much else. And it was looking as though that might achieve some measure of success until the very latter part of the election. I don't know anybody who's very happy about the outcome, but I would say from the perspective of the New Democratic Party, considering what a train wreck this election could have been. And when I say a train wreck, I guess I would consider a majority Liberal government or a majority Conservative government to be a very, very worrisome and potentially disastrous outcome. The outcome, in fact, has been much more diverse, and I think there are some reasons to think that it's a parliament that, because of the fact that nobody quite got what they wanted from the point of view of the four parties elected, that actually this reflects a variety of perspectives in Canadian society that did get actually registered in how the votes came out. Having said that, I'm in total agreement with the point already made about how important it is that we move to a proportional representation system because, of course, we still don't have a situation where how a great many people actually vote ends up being reflected in the voices they hear or the representation they receive, and that it remains very problematic because as long as disproportionate power is held and hoarded by those who benefit most from it, they're not going to be the ones to be willing to move forward with proportional representation or major electoral reform. Having said that, I think that it's probably a good thing. And, of course, we all have our particular objectives or our particular perspectives on this, that no party has a majority. In a very partisan manner, I'm sure it won't surprise you for me to say that an increase of 11 seats in the New Democratic Party has the potential for a very much more significant progressive activist element and a strong pro-Canadian element that is going to be extremely important as we deal with all of those forces and pressures for deeper integration with the U.S. As a fervently devout federalist and a believer that we can come up with a different configuration in Canada that can in fact satisfy many of Quebec's longstanding grievances. I personally am not unhappy that Quebec, that the outcome of the election in Quebec did not result in a much, much bigger vote for the Bloc Québécois. Others, I'm sure, will see that differently. But I think we have the potential in this Parliament for a good deal of pressure from Canadians to be brought to bear for there to be some actual attempt to make this Parliament work for the ordinary people of this country and stand against the corporate pressures that would have been enormous had there been a majority Tory or Liberal government. But I think the events, again, I think I agree with Tony that in one fell swoop, in less than 48 hours, much of the so-called moral high ground on which the Harper government got itself elected was blown to smithereens because of the actions in thumbing, you'd have to say, Harper and the Conservatives absolutely thumbing their noses at the electorate in the riding of Vancouver Kingsway for a party that says grassroots democracy and what constituents want and choose in an election is what should be the all-important thing. In a riding where less than 18% of the electorate voted Conservative, and a large part of the Liberal gain by David Emerson was a result of demonization of Harper, persuading people in that riding that they had to vote Liberal in order to completely prevent the disaster that would incur if there was a Conservative government in Canada. It is just laughable to see now the rationalizations for by Harper for Emerson's defection to the Conservatives. Similarly, for a party that talks about an elected Senate being the only legitimate Senate, et cetera, to have reached out and grabbed, put in the Senate and then into cabinet somebody who was one of the closest political cronies of the of Harper and the Conservative Party is just truly laughable. So it's hard to say where much of this is going to go. If you focus on what they have outlined as the five major priorities, it's clear that there are going to be some very, very major battles. And the one that is most on the front burner at the moment, I think, is the childcare issue, because you have the majority of Canadians having voted for parties that all strongly put forward platforms for a not-for-profit universal child care program, long promised, long overdue, and Harper has basically dared the three parties to reject the Conservative watered down, the antithesis of a national child care program, basically a small subsidy to families, regardless of their need and their income, to try to keep women in the home. I think that's the main thrust of their program, which just doesn't bear any relationship to the real world. Having said that, it is a major, major challenge that is going to be presented in Parliament, that since that will be tied in with the budget, I don't know that there's a single Canadian that has an appetite for an election to be called in a couple of months, but it would appear to be Harper's intention to try to drive that through in a budget, and three opposition parties absolutely will have to figure out how they're going to deal with the possibility that voting against it will in fact bring on another government. I'm going to stop there because I talked longer than I intended. Those are some rambling thoughts, but I'm most interested in hearing what other people less directly connected to the electoral process think about what this all means for Canada, particularly in the context of our global responsibilities and our global contacts.
Yeah, so just stay put. It's quite a good shot right there. Wilma is obviously trying to get in with a comment. I've got a comment. I remind us that this is a class called Globalization Since 1492. So we want to talk geopolitics here. We want to talk about Canada in the world. Wilma, you were trying to get in there.
Yeah, I guess
this idea, concept of the politics of annexation that Tony C. brought up, I really like that expression. When I think about the conservative government, the conservative party, I really think it's pretty clear that if they are seeking to divest further federal powers to the provinces, we can look at what I think is a legitimate scenario. I mean, maybe many people will disagree with this, but my role on this planet is to challenge people that is out there that perhaps sound off base, but I think are actually quite, we really need to think about this. I don't believe that Harper and his party actually really does value Canada. They would be happy to see us become essentially annexed by the U.S. I don't think the U.S. really would want to take on a lot of have-not, quote-unquote, provinces, but they would love to have our resources and everything that's happening in terms of what the Liberal government has started in terms of the standardization of our security policies, of our trade, of our immigration. Everything is leading towards we becoming like the U.S., And that really does disturb me because I really do think there are fundamental value differences between our two countries. And I do not want with these – I've actually been out of the loop in the last few days in terms of these election government developments. And so I've been quite enlightened just in the last few minutes and quite shocked. And I get concerned about the future of Canada. But if there's talk – if Harper is talking about that, yes, we need to go out in the world and – assist other countries in taking on these quote unquote shared higher values. How arrogant of us to think that we have the right way to do things and the only way, the best way, etc. That is completely I think so arrogant of Canadians to think that we have the best system. That it concerns me, and that ties into that it's like, oh, we're going to partake in the U.S. and tag along wherever they go and wreak their empire building and empire destruction on other parts of the world. So I guess bringing it back to some globalization issues. And I'm also curious to get a feeling from those of you in Alberta that when I did the day after the election go onto the CBC website and look at a map of Canada and which seats had been won by each political party, I mean, Alberta's all Tory, and I'm certainly hope that a lot of you students there are not Tories, but I guess if you are, fair enough, we can agree to disagree. I guess I would like to think that perhaps Tony is trying to give you some information that will lead you to question what you want for Canada, in a sense. So, and, you know, bringing in the Maritimes here, the Maritimes went liberal, essentially, stayed liberal. Generally speaking, again, I think there's rural, urban divisions that are important there, but it is interesting if you think of the history of the Maritimes, and I've just been here for a few years myself, but I have lived in other parts of Canada, so I think that's quite interesting, and then again, media framing it as that, oh, those bloody Maritimers, they're living in the backwater, and in a certain way, I do think they are, but that's another story.
Okay, can we...